Good morning, everyone. It's the 23rd of March, 2020. 60, glorious 60, is actually the number of times I have been on this planet spinning around our nearest star. 60 years. It happened a week ago today. And it's glorious to be 60 because some people aren't fortunate enough to make this age, and I am. And what's more, I've managed to achieve it through no effort of my own, through genetics and the personality I'm fortunate to have because of both life experience and genetics. There's no free will. Nothing I have been able to manipulate has got me here other than my genetics and circumstances. And I am so grateful for how well that's worked out. Because I'm fit, strong and healthy, and I'm 60 years old. Go figure. I remember during the 80s, during the Cold War, I honestly did not expect to see 30. I thought the Cold War was going to go hot at some stage and would all be obliterated. I now have similar existential fears for future generations about climate change, but they won't personally impact me other than a little bit of awkwardness and difficulty as I move through my dotage. But I didn't expect to see 30, 40 or 60. So I'm so immensely happy to have got here. And I've got here in such better condition than my dear old dad, who passed away a couple of years after basically 30 years of really uncomfortable existence. He was already quite sick by the time he was my age. And he then just struggled on for the next 20 odd years. So again, I'm really incredibly grateful for the way things have turned out for me. And for my 60th birthday, I decided to unplug. I didn't want the attention. I didn't want the noise and the kerfuffle. And I've tried in the past to do that, and it's basically impossible because all the good, well-meaning people, family, friends, who know, make contact with me, send me text messages and the like. And I thought, there's no way to avoid that. So I thought, I can go and do Vipassana again. I did Vipassana 20 years ago, and I haven't been overly inclined to go back. But I thought, no, if I go and do that, a meditation retreat for 10 days where not only do you not talk, you don't communicate with other people on the course with you, but you also are uncontactable other than extreme emergencies. So I thought, I'll go and do that. And there happened to be a course that was running with my birthday smack bang in the middle of it. And I thought, perfect. I'll run away. Yes, yes, I understand there's a bit of a corruption there. Not wanting to face up to something. I think it's unwanted attention or something. I don't know. I haven't looked too deep into it. But I just followed my feelings and I booked into it. And I was utterly uncontactable. And when I turned my phone on yesterday, and eventually, I'll get back to that in a moment, had a look. There were a few text messages that were a week old. There's a little bit of audio from the UK wishing me a happy birthday. That was lovely. And I could see that people had sent comments into the void knowing that they weren't going to get to me. That was really sweet post-fact. And, you know, that's fine. But on the day, I didn't get wrapped up in it. And what's more, if I hadn't been reminded by Caroline a couple of weeks earlier that it was actually the Monday, I would not have known it was Monday because I hadn't looked at what day my birth date fell on. So I wouldn't have known. And I'd made a conscious effort not to look, and she told me, and unfortunately that gave me recognition that it was going to be Monday. But I must admit, I only did glancingly take notice that it was Monday and that it was my birthday. Three short moments where I went, oh, it's my birthday today. That happened three times, and the rest of the time I was oblivious to it, just concentrating on the work I had to do. So it was good not to get wrapped up in that. But it was also nice to celebrate a decadal birthday doing something I wanted to do and doing something that's quite special and brutal. Yes, my dear friends, I found it brutal. I don't understand how some people can find Vipassana easy, the 10-day course. Some people just bliss out for the duration. They just end up in cloud cuckoo land, you know, rainbows and unicorns, and they're just blissed the whole time. Yeah. First time I did it 20 years ago, I despised it. I struggled, I fought, I hated it for 7 days, and then I fell in love. Oh, bliss. All the endorphins, all the serotonin kicked off, and bang, I was in seventh heaven. I didn't go as deep this time. I didn't go into such a hole. I was nervous before I went because I know how hard it can be, but I had forgotten most things. I didn't go in as deep a hole. It wasn't as bad. But I also didn't have the elation at the end. And it stayed tough for the duration, for all 10 days. I didn't have the reprieve. It was just grinding, grinding practice, sitting bone stationary. After about halfway, not moving a fingertip for a full hour, and doing that multiple times a day. In total, if you're super keen, you can do 10 hours of meditation in a day. I was probably doing about 7, 8, maybe somewhere around there, but you're not moving for a solid hour at a time, and then you have a small stretch and then you get back into it. It is tough. And the mind, natter, 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 doesn't stop. It just keeps chattering away. Oh, it does for me anyway. But I did have a moment. I did have some good experiences. It wasn't all grind. Most of it was. But there were a few moments. There was one moment where I was completely centered in my body. My whole being was in connection with my self. My whole self, but I still had the monkey mind chattering away. Always, always chattering away. Now, that's not unusual. Everybody goes through that. But some people have the ability to quieten it much more. I'm not Robinson Crusoe in the fact that I can't, or I really struggle with it. And I accept that. That's fine. But, you know, I'm trying to train myself so I can quieten my mind. And there was a moment where I felt like I slipped through a heavy velvet curtain, and on the other side of it, I just stuck my head through. There was awareness, but there was no thinking, no voice, no dialogue, just awareness. And if I recognized it even just a 15th more than what I was doing, I'd start thinking and have a dialogue. Can you think without words? It's an interesting question. Well, there were no words, so I wasn't thinking, but I was aware. And I held it, and I had to hold it ever so carefully to maintain the concentration, to have that sense of awareness and being there and not letting it slip away on me, because so easily did I want to pull back from that curtain. But I stayed on the other side and I held it and held it, and it took an immense amount of concentration. And it was just really pleasant to not think but be aware. There's plenty of times I've not thought. We all have. Like when you get in the car and you go for a drive and you suddenly find yourself 10 kilometres down the road and you don't know how you got there. Now, that's not thinking, but it's also not awareness. This was awareness without the thinking. So I held it. And after, it was only a minute. If it was 2 minutes, I'd be lucky. But I think it was more like a minute. After a while, it was just so exhausting, and I felt myself slip back and the curtain closed in front of me. But there was a moment. I had it. It was good. It was very, very good. And there were a few periods like that. Little moments. But the best of it all came when it all wrapped up yesterday. The previous day we were allowed to speak, so we had community. That helped a lot. I really hadn't realised how much I was missing the community, all the people that I was there with. 25 other men. We're all together, but we weren't. Yeah. We didn't know anything about each other. We did not associate. We did not communicate. We didn't. They were all strangers for 10 days. There were also 25 women, but there was, you know, we're in the same meditation hall, but other than the hall where everybody's sitting and working on the property, a complete separation. So, you know, these beautiful creatures were completely across a gulf of accessibility. And the men, you know, they were like flotsam floating around me without having any ability to connect with them at all. So we were allowed to talk for the last day during the breaks, and that was really nice to have community again. But eventually, on the final day, which was yesterday, it all wrapped up and it finished, and it truly unplugged and we're able to chat with people, and I'll suddenly leave and come back out here into the great world. And that's when the peak experience was really started. Now, I understand enough neurobiology to know what's going on. I've just been under a very stressful situation. The dopamine has kicked in. I've got all the reward centers being satisfied. Yep, no worries. Tickety-poo. Thank you. I've done something tough and challenging. You can be rewarded with the dopamine kick. There's also some serotonin floating around in my body, which is giving me a little bit of a blissed out state, maybe even a bit of oxytocin to make me feel all warm and cuddly to the human race, you know. Lovely. But, and I think this is where people get caught with things like Vipassana, they could get addicted to that feeling, or a version of that they get when they're actually doing the practice. Right now, it's tempting to think, oh, yeah, I might do that again. No, I'm not going to. No, it's brutal. And it doesn't, frankly, I don't think it really suits me. The practice is fine. I take nothing away from the philosophy or the actual practice. That's all good. That's all really good. The philosophies, which all come out of Buddhism, the philosophies are good. It's all about living a good life in, you know, every respect. That's great. There's nothing that you can fault there. And the actual practice is a really good, solid foundational meditation practice. I take nothing away from that. The process is brutal, and it's designed to educate you in a relatively short period of time, but also slap you around the chops so you get it. And I think it's probably designed in such a way that it breaks you to make you. Frankly, when I came out yesterday, it felt like it felt good, because it always does when you finish smacking your head against a brick wall. It hurts while you're doing it, and when you stop, you go, oh, I'm glad that's over. I think that's more the reward that I got from it. But having done it, I know that there are going to be many, many good things that come from it. Again, the technique gives you a sense of ability to be aware of myself in the environment. The practice gives me the ability to remain calm while everybody else is losing their heads. And even though it's been 20 years since I did it for the first time, I know it's a foundation, and it has been for these last 20 years of many aspects of my life. And it's enabled me to get through a few crises and also be sensible about some of the petty little issues in my life and my petty little ego that raises its little head from time to time. So that's all wonderful, and that's all just going to be enhanced because of this experience. And that's a nice thing. That's a positive thing to have, because I can go on into the future. So that's worth having paid the price of having done Vipassana again. If, I don't know if I'm even going to post this, because it's starting to turn into a ramble. I might do another version of it that's shorter. But I might post it as is, because it's not a bad summary. We'll see. If anybody is listening to this and you're inclined to do Vipassana, don't expect it to be a walk in the park. I don't think it is for anybody. You may enjoy it. I do know some people, the first time they did it, they just enjoyed it. Good on them. Bonus to them. I know people who do it many, many times, and they do it because they do enjoy it. There's a bit of a scene of people who do it multiple times. I met one guy who goes there every year and has been for 7 years. I don't get it. I met another guy who's an ex-drug addict, and it saved his ass. Actually, I get his story way better. It's, you know, been highly beneficial for him. So, you know, for some people, it's incredibly rewarding from the get-go. Maybe it would be for you. But chances are it would probably be challenging, difficult, maybe even incredibly stressful. But it will be rewarding at the other side of it. And if you want to go, I've already paid for you. It's good. You're already looked after. Just go. Look into it. There are centres around the world. You can go to, there's, I think, four of them in Australia. There are centres around the world, and your fees are already paid for, so don't worry about it. Just go. Yeah, it's not a bad thing to do. It's a good thing. But it's hard work. I actually went for a break, a whole day. I just wanted to sit and be quiet, and unplug from the mayhem of life. I got that wrong. I didn't. Yeah, I unplugged from life, but out of the frying pan into the fire. But that's just the way it is. And once I'd committed myself, one thing I've got is determination. I will stick it out. I might whinge and complain. I was, to myself. I might whinge and complain. I might bitch and get cranky because I'm struggling with it. But I don't, they'll bloody all give up. And yet again, I didn't give up and I got to the end. But I just wanted to unplug. And as it turns out, when I booked this back in November, we didn't know about this health crisis that has raised its ugly head in the last few months. And the course happened to fall just as it peaked. And I had no idea. Yes, it was starting to get pretty hot as I went down. But oh dear, didn't it go off while I was gone? And I had no idea. A couple of times I did wonder. I did wonder what might be happening out there in the COVID-19 world. I thought it doesn't affect me. And that's what I realized. It didn't affect me. You know, it's in the environment, it's in the world, but it's not affecting me. Am I naive? No, I'm not being naive. I'm being realistic. I was in a isolated, insulated, sterile bubble. Nobody was coming in or out. Everyone who was in was already in. There was no way for the virus to access us. We were one of the more pure, pristine groups of people that would have been safe to have a good hug with, frankly. So, no, I wasn't being naive, but it showed me that there are things going on in society, and we were physically removed from the drama, but we all can choose, if we want to be maybe not necessarily physically removed, but emotionally removed from the dramas that happen around us. I learnt the lesson when 9/11 happened. I realised it was a big event when I was briefly told about it on the morning, what had happened, and I went, oh, and I chose not to look. And it took me 12 months to actually see any video of the event. And then I bought into it. And I found that fascinating that during the unfolding crisis of the 12 months, and especially the first few days, I just saw people losing their heads. But then when I saw it 12 months later, when it was an historical event, that's when I lost my head. And I went, hang on, it's history now. And I'm buying into it. Wow, I'm buying into a story, and that's what's happening with this COVID-19. It's a story. It's a story more than anything else. Yes, there is an event that's happening, and we've got to be sensible about it, but how much information do you need? You need some. And you actually need way less than you think. Like, I only need a couple of tiny bits of information. One is, wash my hands, avoid contact with icky, sticky things, and if I do, wash my hands. Tango, unfortunately, is going to be shut down for a while. Large groups and meetings of people, you know, it's not going to happen for a while. Okay. And social distancing, which is what I was just talking about. So social distancing and hygiene. That's all I need to know. I don't need to know the numbers. I don't need to know about the cruise ships. This is stuff I picked up on before I went in. I don't need to know about the dramas. All of that noise are just stories. And the more I hear them, I realised before I went down, the more I was getting emotionally wrapped up in it. And then I unplugged for 10 days and I felt the weight lift. And then when we were exiting, they told us how things had changed, and I felt myself being drawn back into the stories. Because nothing had really changed. Yeah, okay, it got more severe and the impacts were greater. But basically the story hadn't changed, but there were a lot more stories. Today, I'm back out in the community. I know the rules. Social distancing, hygiene. But I'm heading into Maroochydore at the moment to go and have breakfast. I'm going to sit in a cafe and there's going to be other people there. They've got more responsibility. They've got to look after the hygiene of the premises. They've got to keep things clean and a little bit of sterilisation. You know, they've got to know more. I don't have to worry about that. What's the stuff I need to worry about? It's all I told you. A little bit of hygiene and social distancing. Fine. The rest are stories. So, as I unplugged from Vipassana yesterday, I turned on my phone for the first time in 10 days. And as soon as I turned it on, first thing I did is I put it on airplane mode. So it wouldn't start accessing data. And then I went through notifications and I turned everything off. Good morning. And I turned everything off. All the notifications I turned off, totally disconnected. Eventually when I turned my data on and emails downloaded, I just went through and deleted everything other than what I needed. And of the 200 and something emails I had, I think I kept 10. All the rest were things like news articles and noise. And a lot of it was noise about the situation at the moment. And there was just other stuff which was, you know, already dated, frankly, because it was a couple of weeks old. So I just deleted it all, got rid of it, and kept about 10 emails to have a look at. So I've been really careful. I haven't checked out the news. What I've realised is, if this turns into a firestorm, if it goes really bad, I'm going to find out. It'll be in the water. It'll flow through the networks. There'll be banners and signs put up around the street saying, lock down, go home, don't leave, whatever. You know, if it gets really severe, there'll be massive notifications. I won't not be able to see them. It's as simple as that. I don't need to keep up with the minutiae of the news so I don't miss it. The minutiae I can miss, it's irrelevant. And the really important stuff, which I do need to find out about, it's going to be so damn obvious. It'll be, like I said, it'll be in the water I'm swimming in. So I'm not too concerned. It's an interesting experiment to run. I'm probably going to have to do another version of this. This is going to be for my future reference. I'm going to have to do another version of this if I want to publish any of it. It's about the stories. And this is a story I'm telling. And people can choose to listen to it or not. And if I want to tell it, that's my business. But it's more important we think about what we want to listen to. And unfortunately, the media is set up in such a way that they manipulate the story so you want to listen to it. But should you? And how do you not? Especially like the way this situation is manipulating all of our conditioned responses. Should you listen to it? I would suggest there needs to be a cognitive decision made to not. And how do you do that when your all of your little human monkey brain psychology points are being titillated? How do you do it? I don't have too many answers, other than blind determination and doggedness. But I'm grateful for the fact that what happened was I was unplugged for 10 days, and so I had a pause in my life when I realized there was a lot of noise that I didn't have to engage with, and I was just fine. So, I think I'm going to continue to do it. No, I am going to do it, simple as that. So, here I'm on the Sunshine Coast. I decided I wasn't going to go back into the real world straight after Vipassana. Some people do. They finish at 6:30 on Sunday morning. They drive back home and they're back at work the next day. And I just thought, for where at least I am, it maybe it's fine if you've done it lots of times, but for where I'm at, it was almost disrespectful to do all that hard work and then just almost blow it off by going back to work straight away. I thought, no, I'm going to spend a couple of days up here on the Sunshine Coast and just chillax and allow myself to have a bit of an indulgence. So I've got an Airbnb, a nice little cheap Airbnb, which is just a tiny little room. It's not costing me much, and it's a block from the beach, and I'm now walking all around the coastline around Maroochydore, and I'm going to have breakfast. And it's wonderful to be so fortunate to be able to have these opportunities. If I do decide to publish this, thank you for listening. If I don't, well, it's reference for the future for me. Bye-bye.